You're listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast Show.
Welcome to another episode of the Buckeye Visualist, a podcast for members of the Ohio News Photographers Association, supporting Ohio's professional and student visual storytellers. I am your host, Lori King, and I thank you for tuning in. This show is going to be of great interest to ONPA Clip Contest competitors who I dare say have been shooting hard to unseat the longtime reigning champion, Columbus Dispatch photojournalist Kyle Robertson. Kyle has won the ONPA Clip POI 6 times in a row, and he has been patiently or impatiently waiting with bated breath to see if he was going to make it lucky number 7. Drum roll, please. The December results have been announced, and I'm proud to announce that Kyle is the reigning ONPA Clip Contest champion once again. Congrats, Kyle.
Thank you very much.
It was a close race between Kyle and Toledo Blade photojournalist Jeremy Wadsworth, a former colleague of mine. Kyle ended the year with 1,734 points. Jeremy nipped closely at his heels with 1,544. Blade photog Becca Benson took third. She was only 30 points behind Jeremy. Fun fact, Toledo Blade photojournalists finished in second, third, fourth, and ninth place. That's like half of the staff. And no, I wasn't one of them. Anyway, congratulations to all of you Buckeyes out there who entered the clip contest. Now is probably a good time to announce that Jeremy and Becca are now the new administrators of the ONPA Monthly Clip Contest, taking over from Kyle. Congratulations to both of you for taking on such an important task. Well, you probably have guessed by now, or at least hoped, that Kyle is my guest for this month's show. The Clip Contest King is a homegrown Buckeye, born and raised in Columbus. He didn't stray far from his hometown when he went off to college. He's a 2006 graduate of Ohio University, where he earned his visual communication degree. But like many of you out there, photojournalism wasn't his first occupational choice. You might be surprised to learn that he was initially an engineer major, but he'll tell you that story. So let's get to it. Welcome to the show, Kyle. I know we are all dying to ask, how do you do it? You have been dominating the ONPA Clip Contest for an entire decade, coming in either first or second. On the ONPA blog, the headline for February 3rd, 2021 reads like this. Kyle Robertson, Clip POI, yet again. Again, 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 again. That's 6 agains, and this year makes 7. What will it take for someone to unseat you as the king of clips?
Hopefully everyone has another great year. I think Jeremy and Rebecca are right there, and you know, I can see either one of them potentially winning this year. So after reading hearing your intro about all the Blade photographers, I need to get some of the Dispatch photographers to start entering. Gets back in the contest in the top 10.
that's for sure. I know they're biting at the bit to finally win. I've been working alongside Jeremy for, you know, like 15 years, and he works really hard at the clip contest. I have never entered it, so I can't, that I had even had the opportunity to unseat you.
I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about the contest. If you take a great photo, no matter what month or what category, I mean, you know, you could place, you could, you know, I just think it's, for me, it's kind of helped me throughout my years of constantly kind of, you know, getting better month by month and year by year. And I like the simple fact that it's based off a 1 month. So there's 12, you know, quote unquote contests. And, you know, I think a lot of people get kind of freaked out about the yearly contest and, oh, I don't have a long-term story or a feature story or anything like this. And I think for most photographers nowadays, there aren't a whole lot of opportunities to do stories and do long-term projects. And so I think the clip contest is a perfect way to judge yourself and how you're doing month by month and category by category and year after year. It's pretty cool. Bob and the other members have kept a pretty great website and blog up and going with month by month. So you can literally go back in and look at the pictures from the clip contest like 10 years ago each month and see, you know, who was first place, Sports Action, who was feature. I've done it multiple times to get different ideas for how to shoot things a different way. So it's an incredible resource that any photographer, not necessarily even in Ohio, but just a young photographer in general can go through and literally spend hours on our website and looking at all the great photos from all the photographers in the last 10 or 15 years on our website.
So it's a great learning tool. They say, imitation is the best form of flattery.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I've always been a person who loves looking at other people's work and trying to figure out how they did it. And I always kind of, saw really cool photos and be like, hey, I could do that at this assignment whenever, this time of the year or whatever. And I think a lot of photographers, I don't know who else does it, but I always look, at the dispatch. We have an incredible archive that I can go back and look at all the incredible photographers that are before me and kind of get an idea, of different things that they've shot or different assignments and the way they did it. And that's how I learned. I don't know if a lot of other people do the same way, but I'm constantly, especially when I, first got started trying to figure out how people created photos. I mean, if you learn and you figure out how they do it, when the opportunity arises for you to in that same situation, then you know what to do and you know how to do it.
Can you talk about what makes you tick? Like so many of us, you initially were driven by sports, but photo stories, not so much. Can you tell us how you evolved into preferring to shoot a variety of subjects like food and portraits?
When I first got to the dispatch, we had a lot of photographers. It was back before everything started to get slashed. So, when I started, there was 13 or 14 staff photographers. We had two interns at the time. We had like three or four picture editors. We had an assignment editor. We had all these different, nowadays you one person does like six jobs. But back when I first started in 2006, you had all these people. When you're first getting on a staff that big, I think you're trying to find your place and where you are in the lineup. Do you do sports? Do you do portraits? You got to kind of find out what you're good at. And truthfully, the first 3 or 4 years, that's all I wanted to do was sports. I mean, I love sports. I still love sports to this day. And, that's all I wanted to do. I worked nights and weekends, first 3 or 4 years, and 90% of what I would shoot would be sports. And at that time, we had a really, really good photographer named Neil LaRon, who was the clip king at that time and an incredible photographer. And, so I sat back and I watched him and I learned. And I think one of the things that kind of got me going was my boss at the time was Carl Coons. He kind of had this old school approach where it's like, I think nowadays, because the staffs are so small and not as large, they kind of just throw you out into the fire, and see if you can sink or swim and just, hey, go to all these events and all these things. Back then, I had to earn, my assignments. Like I said, we had a really good sports photographer at the time. And, I remember getting really mad a couple of times because there were events and things that I'd want to do. And he's like, hey, you're not ready yet. Hey, you're not ready. And so I think that kind of really got me in the mindset of like, hey, I need to outwork everybody that, that I'm going up against. And yeah, they're my teammates and we're part of a staff, but, I want to beat them just like a competition, just like any sport event. And so I think the early years that kind of like really got me going to kind of go above and beyond and kind of see what I could do and not just show up and sit in the court and take photos, get there early, set up remotes, set up multiple remotes, go take, pictures before the game and after the game and different stuff and not just show up and do the, do the act, quote unquote action. And I think that really did kind of push me down the competitive of striving to be the best and striving to, I wanted in my mind that if a big sporting event came up, that the first name they would think of is myself. And still to this day, you know, I want my bosses to kind of, you know, hey, we want to send Kyle no matter what. Now, many years later, you know, now I have a family and other obligations, so it doesn't always work like that. But when I was young, that was my mindset, you know, and I think me kind of quote unquote sitting on the bench and watching other people do it, I think it really kind of put a fire under me to kind of do it my way, to do it different, to do it in a way that other people might have not done it, you know, in that way, and kind of show that, hey, like, you know, he can hold his own, and, you know, we're comfortable sending him to any type of sporting event out there. But I will say, though, the thing that kind of go back to the question kind of first, like, how did that kind of change? We had so many great photographers on staff when I first started. We had Neil LaRon, Chris Russell, and Eric Albrecht. If any young photographers out there, go find Eric Albrecht in German Village in Columbus, Ohio, and buy him lunch or coffee and just sit and talk to him. He's probably one of the greatest photographers that most people don't know. He sees the world in a totally different way. And he is truly amazing. So we had all these great photographers, and I believe it was my first ever bowl game I went with Ohio State. So like Ohio State football, you know, in Columbus is, you know, as big as the Bengals and bigger, you know, as big as the brand, it's our biggest brand. And so back in the early 2010s, you know, you go to a bowl game and you actually would go for a whole week. You know, now you go in the day before, you shoot the game, you go home. So we went, there's three of us that went, I think it was down to Jacksonville, and we were there all week, you know, going to the press conferences, going to practice, going to the charity events, doing all this stuff. And one night I had a dinner with one of the photographers, Chris Russell, and we just kind of talked about life and photo. And he knew I wanted to do sports, but he really convinced me that, like, hey, there's more to sports. Like, you know, he told me you're a fantastic photographer, but there's more to see in this photo world than just sports. And so, he kind of was telling me what the future is going to be like before I knew, you know, cause he's like, you know, you want a family, you want a wife and kids, you can't always shoot sports, which is true. And he kind of foresaw the whole industry kind of changing, in front of his eyes. And, you know, at the time staffs are getting smaller and smaller. And he's like, you know, you want to be able to do everything because the staffs are going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And, you know, you don't want to be just a one trick pony. And I think at that time we had other photographers who kind of concentrated in one thing. And I think he saw that, like, that's not the way to go, that you need to be good at multiple things. And so I think that kind of, in my mind, kind of opened things up to me. It was like, hey man, there's a whole nother world of photography besides sports photography, you know, at the newspaper. And it was kind of a wide awakening kind of early on in my career.
Do you think that diversity in subject matter is the key to winning clip contest? And on the other hand, do you think shooting photo stories is the key to winning POI?
Yes. I mean, if you're going to have a, you know, if you are like to do the longer stories and that kind of stuff, that stuff in that annual contest always does well. I mean, any POI photographer of the year has multiple stories, you know, has really good in-depth stuff. But that's not what I was interested in. That's not, you know, look, I've done stories. I like them. You know, if I'm going to do a story, I'm going to do a more sports kind of story. Cause I don't think there's enough people out there doing enough sports stories. And so to me, like, that's more impactful for what I want to do and maybe what my community want instead of doing something else. And also right now we have a couple of people on staff that's what they like to do. So like, they can go do their stuff and I can do my stuff and everyone kind of be happy. But I think having a diversity of photos, when I enter, you know, it all depends on the month and what your assignments are, but I don't enter all nine of my entries in one category. It's one or two sports, one or sports action, one or two features, sports features, portrait, you know, illustration. If I do have spot news, you know, I always throw spot news in there. Because that's a category that, you know, if you have anything, it usually does pretty well. But yeah, I think it's about being diverse, being able to have a variety of stuff. But there are times when, you know, the schedule, you know, you work nights for a full month and you just have a lot of sports and there's nothing you can kind of do about it.
When you're shooting an assignment, do you have contests in mind or do you?
No.
So the contests for you are after the fact that kind of force you to go through your take every month and then you select from there.
I've never been one to shoot for contests. That's not my thing. I mean, I know there are people who do that and hey, that's what gets them through the day and everything. I mean, that's not even on my, I mean, literally like I never think about, oh, I need to do this for a contest. I've never ever said, I need to do this assignment because I need it for my portfolio for whatever. It's not about that. The great thing about photography for me is you're judging yourself. If you want to half-ass it for say, and just go there and show up and take 25 photos, you know, nowadays people aren't going to say anything, you know, maybe some editors will, but I mean, I think the role of the picture editor has really changed in the last couple of years, at least on our staff. They're just happy if you turn in anything at this point. I mean, I don't know how it is up, you know, up in Toledo in the last couple of years, but there's not that, you know, oh, you didn't do very well or whatever. Like it's just like, hey, you know, you did a game. Good job. So it really comes down to like, it's you going against the game and seeing how you can showcase your talents and your skills and see if you can make, you know, great photos. And yeah, there are days when everything's against you and you just want to get it done and you don't do it. I want to create high quality content. I don't want to just throw 35 photos out there and them all be subpar. Like I'd much rather turn in 18 to 20 high quality photos that aren't all the same, that are different in that there's a variety of stuff. If there are viewers that go through a gallery, they can look and say, oh, that's really nice. Like, I just don't want this. I don't want to throw 40 photos just to throw 40 photos up there. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does, because when you're in the business a long time, I mean, I was at the Blade 26 years. That means I shot 26 Easter egg hunts, 26, you know, years of kids sitting on Santa's lap, 26 Christmas parades. So the challenge is to actually shoot them all differently and not get into this pigeonhole where, oh gosh, I have to shoot another Easter egg hunt. This is, you know, you check off the boxes. Like one time I did an Easter egg hunt and I actually, they had the Easter egg hunts laying around. So I went outside as they were inside getting their face painted. I went outside and was watching them put the Easter eggs down on the ground and a duck came over. And I'm like, there's a duck roaming around these eggs. So I actually got a really nice picture of a duck picking up an Easter egg. So it was really cool. But that's because I was thinking I wanted something different. So that's when you have to keep your mind open to not the normal stuff you shot year after year after year.
Right.
Do you think you have a style that guides you?
Style.
It sounds like you have a great work ethic because when you're setting up remotes, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, I find the challenge of remotes and all that kind of fun stuff to, you know, do I do it every single game? You know, not now, but when I first started, yeah. I mean, I have a funny story to tell you about that in 1 second. What my style? You know, I think a lot of photographers like, you know, when you look at the work and, you know, I think a lot of photographers like to have dark photos where, you know, you don't see the faces, you know, there's a lot of shadows and highlights and that kind of stuff. I think my style is a little bit more cleaner. You know, I like to see faces. I like it well lit. I don't think I have a style. I think I have many styles. I think I have some, you know, some characteristics of other photographers that I've been around with that I've worked that I've kind of, you know, oh, I like how they do those portraits, but then I kind of tweak it just a little bit. So it's kind of like my own, you know, but I don't think I have my own style. I just kind of go out and try to shoot the best photos that I can. And my dad at a very young age told me when I told him I wanted to be a photographer, you know, he said, you know, I know nothing about photography or art or anything, but he goes, you know, I once read, when somebody's zigging, you zag, and when somebody else is zagging, you zig. And so it took me a while to kind of like take his advice and kind of like incorporate that into my photography. But I think that's kind of true, because I don't like to be where other people are. You know, I don't like to be with the group unless I absolutely have to be a group of, you know, of photographers. Hey, you can't leave this area. You know, I kind of like to wander on my own. And I think a lot of times it pays off. I mean, a lot of times it doesn't. But I kind of, I don't know, I just like to do my own thing, you know, especially in the football field. I don't like to be around people. I kind of just try to figure out how to do it a little bit differently. And I think if anything, it's trying to shoot tighter. I don't think you can be tight enough, with the sports stuff. I think that's the key, I think, to a lot of really good, sports photography, because I think a lot of people now are more worried about getting the shot than actually trying to get like a really nice shot. And I think it's easier to be wider and then crop in than to be super close and then kind of go from there. So I don't know if that's, I don't necessarily think that's my style, but that's kind of how I look at things, is I want to try to be tighter and closer than most folks.
I've had readers come up to me over the years and tell me that when they read the paper, they like looking at the photos and guessing who took what because of the individual styles that us photographers have. So, you know, whether we know it or not, we probably all do have a particular style.
I think it changes, though. I think as you get older, you know what you kind of like and what you don't like. And I think that it just kind of changes, like, as you do things. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but I think it kind of changes over time.
What is your equipment? What do you carry around with you on a daily basis?
Well, that's a good question, because everything's changed. We just switched over to Sony. So that's been a big change, at the Dispatch. We were Canon for about 25 years. In my Canon bag, so that'd be like 2 months ago, I would usually have one camera, like a 5D Mark IV. You know, we're issued three cameras, but two of them are sports cameras, and then one is kind of like, you know, an everyday use camera. So I'd have my two sports cameras kind of in my car, you know, kind of in my suitcase, just in case I need it. But a lot of times I would just go to an assignment with one camera, 70 to 200, a 24 to 105, a 24-1.4. So that was a like a nice fixed range kind of thing. And then a 50. So it's pretty simple. Obviously for sporting events, you know, I had a 300 and a 400, and you know, we have some pool lenses that we use, but I'm a pretty simple, there's not a whole lot of lens choices and kind of moving things around.
What about your lighting choices?
Oh, lighting. Oh yeah. So I have a mixed bag of lighting. I have three LED lights that are my own, that I like to light things with, ice lights. And then I have three Canon flashes that I use. So on a particular assignment, I could in theory use six different lights. The smaller Canon flashes were real good for the small systems lighting and kind of like when there's a bigger room that you need to light up. But there'd be multiple times, even when I shoot food, that I would use, you know, four or five, you know, lights. So I'd use a combination of the LED lights and then also the Canon lights. So it's kind of just a mixed bag. I think you should light pretty much everything. I feel like lighting is something that's hard, and I think people don't like it because it's hard and it doesn't always work out right away. But when you light something really well, I think it adds an extra element to it. So I like to, when I do portraits and that kind of stuff, I like to light them, but then also shoot a shallow depth of field. So, you know, 1.4, 2, 2.8, where a lot of people, if you are going to light, you're going to do it at a 5.6 or, you know, an F8 and light it. But I find it to be harder and kind of more dramatic that if you light it and you keep the, you know, the aperture low, that it kind of has a different kind of look to it that most people aren't comfortable trying.
Do you ever use your smartphone for pictures?
Yes, if I need something super wide. So I'm not a fan of the 16 to 35, the Canon. I can never find it in focus, or it kind of looked wonky on the edges. So if I need something super, super wide, I'll pull out my iPhone, and I have one of the 13 Pros, and it, you know, on the 0.5 or whatever, it's pretty wide. So I've used that a couple times for the super, super wide stuff, but that doesn't happen too often.
And what about video? Because I know the Blade will go in cycles. Sometimes we'll be like, shoot a video where everything you shoot. And then there are months they'll go by and they're like, they don't care if we shoot a video. Sure. What is the Dispatch's philosophy on videos?
It's changed also. For a while there, it was all about video and smartphone video and all that kind of stuff. We're lucky enough. We have two full-time videographers that do video and do stills. Doral Chenoweth and Courtney Hergeschmeyer, and they take a lot of it. We haven't had to do too much. I think the last video I did was like 2 years ago. And one of the sports stories that I did, I kind of put together my own little video of some interview and that kind of stuff. So it's not really at the moment kind of key, but everyone knows on the staff knows how to do it. We've all had to do videos. So we've all had to do them. For a while there, gosh, we did press conference videos, plug into the mall blocks. I did that a lot of times in the playoffs for NHL Blue Jackets like 3 years ago. You'd go there, you set up a tripod, and you record, you do little 2 minute videos, and that's what they wanted. But that's kind of changed a little bit now too. So not much video, but everyone can do it. Everyone knows, how to do it, but it's just kind of, if you want to do it, go for it, but it hasn't been kind of pushed around lately.
Well, the problem with videos is whenever I really enjoyed shooting videos, but when I had to shoot a video, I got lost in the videos, and then the stills would suffer.
Yeah.
So you can't really do both equally well. So it's encouraging to know that Dispatch has two videographers. The Blade used to have one. Of course, all these small town newspapers, you're doing everything. So, comes and goes.
It's tough. I mean, it's hard. I think, like you said, it's hard to do both. But I think it's even harder that, we used to have a couple of years ago, you would show up and Doral or Courtney would be there. So you would have to work around them and the reporter. So they would do the videos and then you would do the stills. And that almost was as hard as doing both of them, because, you had extra people you had to look out for and move around. And, sometimes when you're in an intimate setting, you have a two photographers and a reporter there, I think the subjects kind of get a little freaked out at times that, hey, what's going on here? We've dealt with all that kind of stuff, but if they want video, I'll bite my tongue and do it, but it's not something that I like to do or that I hope to do in the near future.
You've been at the Dispatch for nearly 17 years. I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes in camera equipment, staff, business models. Can you tell us what it's been like documenting history at one newspaper for nearly two decades?
Yeah, I think it's been an honor. I mean, I think I've been extremely lucky that I've been at the Dispatch, and that the Dispatch for a long time was family owned. So they put resources and they enjoyed the community journalism aspect of everything. And so I've never really had that small kind of town where there's one or two people on your staff. I've always had a big staff. Even now when, we're at seven, that's still, pretty big compared to most newspapers here in, around the Midwest. But I just think it's an honor. I mean, you get to go to all these awesome events, good and bad, and you get to document history and people get to look back at your stuff. Especially at the sporting events, I always find it that when I'm at a big event or a bowl game or whatever, that I'm, that I'm trying to work for the fans. You know, I want them to remember, you know, all these great photos or this great play or the game winning, you know, goal or whatever. I've been lucky. And, you know, even through the sale of the Dispatch to Gatehouse and then to Gannett, we still do a lot of things. It's not what it once was, but you're still documenting history for the good and the bad. And I think it's for those who are who aren't in it, you know, I don't know if you're significant other. My wife's a teacher, so she doesn't really kind of get it. You know, she's always saying, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why you're, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's when there is crazy stuff going on, you know, like all the riot stuff, like I enjoyed it. I know that sounds weird. Inside all that chaos, you know, I found peace and I was taking photos and doing what, you know, getting names and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm glad it doesn't happen all the time. I wouldn't like it, but there's just something to taking photos. You know, you're like a history major. You're documenting history for everyone to relive, you know, and just kind of see what happens or to kind of show people what they didn't see. So there's a variety of different ways of doing it, but I just think I've been really lucky to be at the Dispatch the last almost 17 years.
I definitely think that it's a privilege doing what we do. And no matter what it is, how happy, how sad, right, how tragic, how exciting to be on the front lines. Those press passes get us to a lot of places that most people will never go. And it's our job to be the eyes and the ears of our community. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I have a good friend that I went to college with, and he went into finance and was working as a CPA. And so we would, you know, text back and forth, oh, I'm at this game and whatever. And he's like, oh man, you got the greatest job in the world, you know? And I text him back. I'm like, dude, you have the greatest job. You make like double what I make. You know, he's like, no, you have the greatest job. So I think, you know, it truly is, you meet incredible people. And I'm still blown away to this day that like people that you don't know that you meet to take their photos, they like let you into their life for a couple hours or 15 minutes. And, you know, 95% of the people that I've, or 99% of the people have been awesome to deal with. And, you know, there are those people who don't want their picture taken or whatever, but it just blows my mind away that people still to this day want to tell you their story, what they're passionate about, what issues that they're going through, and they don't even know you like that. I think that's incredible. And I do think there's an art to that for all you young photographers out there, because you can't just show up and expect to take awesome photos. I always kind of show up with the reporter and I sit through the interview. I'm not one of those guys who likes to show up, take the photo and then leave while the reporter's doing their thing. Because I think you learn things. You learn during the interview process, you learn what their story is, either what they've gone through, how they've gone through it. And I think I always felt that if I can relate to them and I can talk to them while I'm setting up and while I'm taking the photos, they're going to be more interactive with you. And then they are going to help you make better photos. Now, that's not always the case, but when you are talking to the subject while you're taking photos, hey, look at this. Do you like that? Or what if we did this? Or what if we did that? You know, they're working with you to make better photos. And I think those are the better photos when they work with you and you work with them. And they feel connected when you ask them questions. I mean, when I go into houses, I look at all around the walls. I see if they have kids, if they don't have kids, where they went to school. If they have a favorite team or anything that I can relate to them, you know, oh, you went to Michigan or you went to Toledo, like, oh man, that basketball game last night was crazy. Or, you know, they have two kids or, you know, hey, how old are your kids? And I think that's a skill that I think that a lot of young photographers have a hard time with, is like the interaction, you know, between your subject, because you can learn a lot just by sitting there listening to the interview and then just looking around at a building, an office, their house, or anything. And if you can make a connection and talk to somebody, they will be more willing to try different things, to give you more than 5 minutes. You know, if they only give you 5 minutes to take a photo, you know, I found that if you can interact with them and make a quick connection, they'll give you more time and more access, and you can get better photos.
True that.
Yeah.
So this weekend, December results finally came in. Can you tell me where you were when you found out you won a seventh time and how you felt?
I think the email came right after my son's hockey game. So we were getting out off the ice. I saw the email, but I knew the email wouldn't open up because we're in a hockey rink and it's not very good. So I had to wait a little bit till I got outside. Bob DeMay always told me he always thought winning the clip contest is a harder achievement than winning the POY every year. And he said, you know, you're going up against a lot of people. There's 12 contests. And I never really believed him, you know, until, you know, the last couple of years when whatever, these awards start stacking up and everything. But I truly do think that being consistent month in and month out and year in and year out is a hard thing to do. And I think it's not the wins that I'm probably most proud. It's being up there for the last 10 or 11 years, being near the top is probably what I'm most proud of. And doing it in a way that nobody else has done. So I kind of enjoy that aspect, but I'm also not one to I don't care. Like I'm just happy with that. I'm still making quality pictures 17 years in, that, you know, that it's not just sports, that I'm a very well-rounded photographer that can take great food pictures, portraits, spot news, general news, sports action. And I think that that's what I'm most happy is that because there is a drop off, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, not everyone's Tom Brady, not, you know, they can't play, you know, their best until they're, you know, 45 or however old he is, because there is eventually going to be a drop off in how I produce. And I'm trying to push that back as long as I can. And I know it's coming, and maybe that's what I'm scared of. And, you know, but, you know, there are so many great photographers out there. You know, I know it's going to happen eventually. So I kind of feel like that old guy just kind of out there just slinging it still, if that makes sense. I mean, but I don't do it for awards. I don't care. I mean, it's great. Like, I think it's great. And I think I think the clip contest has helped me because you're going up against people month in and month out. And, you know, I get jealous of the people in Springfield who have 1,000 spot news photos and I get one a year. I don't know. I just think that competition's a good thing. I'm not afraid of it. I think the other thing that I've been blessed with the last 10 years is even at the Dispatch, my teammates, three photographers come, you know, Josh Bickle, Adam Cairns, and Eamon Queenie, who used to be with us, 5 years ago. Those photographers pushed me day in and day out. And, you know, we were a part of a team. We go to different events and you see what they're doing. And it only makes me want to be better. Like, anytime I'm working with, especially right now with Josh and Adam, we go to a big game. Like, yes, we have a team and we have positions. You got to do that. And you have to cover this side and that side and be responsible. But at the end of the day, I want to kick their butt. I want to make the best pictures. I want to do the best. I want to get every play, key play. And so I think, you know, having, you know, what's the old adage? Iron sharpens iron. And so, I think that if you have other great photographers who are willing to push you, I think that's elevated my game, is that I've always had two or three other photographers that produce awesome stuff day in and day out and game in and game out that you just want to beat them. And I think that's had a lot to do with my successes, you know. And the best part is I can go to them and say, right now I could go to Adam and go, hey, I was having this problem with this remote. What, you know, I did this, I did that. It wasn't going well, whatever. And then he would be like, oh yeah, you got to do this, and this. Like, there's no animosity between us. We're all working together. He wants me to do well, and I want him to do well, and we help each other out. And there's no, like, you're doing better, I'm doing better. Like, it's just like a group of guys who just, you know, and girls, we have Barb on our staff, that just push each other to make the best photos. And I think that's had a lot to do with it. I can't pinpoint like one particular reason or why. Like I just want to continue to get better. My father-in-law is a big time golfer. He golfs all the time. And he always tells me, hey, you can be a really good golfer if you practice. You know, golf's an easy sport if you practice, you know. And so, like, to me, I think photography is the same way. Like, you know, you have all these assignments and events, and it's some of the stuff happens over and over again. And so it's how you process it, how you figure out what's going to happen before it happens, and then trying to get the best image in a unique way of doing things, you know, slightly different each time. I mean, I guess it'd be kind of like the definition of insanity, right? It's the same thing over and over again.
So when you open up that email, did you pump your fist or do a happy dance, or who did you text first? How did you react?
I told my wife and she just rolled her eyes at me.
Oh, that would not have been me. That I would have done the happy dance, and I would have texted everybody I knew. You mentioned that you want to become a hockey dad.
Oh, yeah.
By the time you're 44. Tell us about your family, a little bit about your family. Sure. And what do you mean by the time you're 44?
I have a wife that I've known since kindergarten. We're in the same kindergarten class. So I've known her almost 34 years. Actually I proposed to her 9 years ago on this day, on Valentine's Day, the day she hates the most. Aww. Aww. And then I have two boys. I have a 7-year-old named Keegan, who's a first grader, and he's into travel hockey, and he's like taken off, and we're pretty much at a rink, oh gosh, 3 or 4 times a week, and then pretty much all weekend long. And then I have another little boy, Camden, who's 3, almost be a 4, and he's starting to follow his brother's footsteps and, you know, wanting to play hockey and doing everything that he does. So, you know, I'm almost be 39 in March. I'd like to be done with everything with my career in the next 5 years. I've invested my money pretty well and taken some financial risks, and they've kind of turned out to be good investments, and hopefully you know, in the next five or so years, if everything goes to plan, you know, hopefully I can retire and kind of be a stay-at-home hockey dad. So
you just perked up the ears of everybody out there looking, that's going to be wanting to work at the dispatch in the next 5 years.
I think the older you get, you set all these other goals and, you know, things shift, and then, you know, you have kids, and truth be told, you know, right now, you know, I'd rather watch my kid, you know, practice and play games than at sporting events right now. And so like, that's what, you know, fuels me and gets me kind of doing everything. And, you know, I know I can't be to everything, you know, cause with the nature of the job. But right now I'm trying my best to take them to every practice and be there for every game. And you know, that's kind of what I want to do, because I know photography and newspaper business aren't what they once were. I mean, you know, you have to kind of invest your own money and kind of figure out how you're going to retire. And I think I've always been, even at a young age, I knew that I wanted to retire early, and that I put forth, you know, a lot of my savings and stuff very early on, probably when most people, you know, probably wouldn't have invested money on things. And so I just knew that I didn't want to do it forever. And hopefully, that, knock on wood, all, you know, some of the investments and things I've made will happen, and I can retire early. And if not, I'll just keep on grinding.
Being a hockey dad is a noble goal.
Except for I take photos. And so now all the dads, the mom, after every goal and after every, hey, did you get that photo of my kid? Did you do this? You do that? So I've kind of become the team photographer, for say.
I get that.
Yeah.
We all get that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's great. It's great. So,
well, we all want to know, are you gunning for number 8? Jeremy Wadsworth probably hopes not.
I like competition. I like seeing what's out there, you know, and I think it's a good testament to how you're shooting. And, you know, the great thing about, you know, the clip contest is you don't have to be awesome every single month. There are months that other people do extremely well and have great months, but then, you know, it's a nice way to kind of see how you stack up year in, year out. My goal for this year is to get more people to enter. I truly think it's a great competition. I know more folks at the Dispatch, Josh, Barb, Adam, Fred. We have a long list of people that need to start entering back up.
You know, Barb's going through grad school now, so she's going to be a little busy. she's a Kent State Flash now.
Yeah. Oh, but no, she's a Bobcat. She's a, you know, she'll always say she's a Bobcat.
Bobcat first, Kent State Flash second.
There you go.
A master's outweighs a bachelor's.
Yes, I will say yes.
I got my master's and my bachelor's at Kent State, so I'm a little biased.
Hey, anything in Ohio is good. Just keep it in Ohio, right?
That's right. Are there any last tips or tricks you want to share before we wind this down?
For anyone who's listening, I think the great thing about being a photographer is that most photographers are an open book. So, I mean, if anyone has any questions about anything, you know, how you do it or whatever, like all my communication lines are open. I'm always, you know, we'll text back or email back or call back. But no, I just think that like being a part of an organization is important, and we need more people to volunteer and to kind of help out and kind of continue to grow ONPA. We just need to get everyone involved. I mean, there are a lot of small papers that enter contests that aren't, ONPA members. And hopefully we'll get back to an annual contest in person and some other workshops and some kind of other things. But there are multiple ways that ONPA has helped myself throughout the years of becoming a better photographer. And, if I can help any young photographer with anything, like just ask, like I will help, you know, no matter what. You deal with a lot of people too. I mean, do you feel the same way? I mean, most photographers are an open book, right?
Yes. And if they're not, then no one wants to be around
them. Yeah. Bad juju your way, right?
Exactly. I always felt like going to sporting events was like going to a family reunion, and they were all my brothers. Yeah. And I say brothers because I was typically one or two of the only females on the field or on the court. That's changing. But I always felt like it was a homecoming for every game I went to, because we did that. We shared, you know, our experiences, and if we had technical problems, we helped each other. So I totally agree with you. I think we're a team. And I do feel for those one-man shops who they don't have anybody to do that with. And that's why ONPA is so important, because we become their family, right?
Right. I will say that one thing that just jogged my memory, that, because you talk about like showing up and being a part of a family. I think any young photographer out there, like don't talk to just the photographers there. Go talk to the SIDs. Go talk to the people who are in charge of the team. Go have conversations with the reporters elsewhere, because you'll be amazed about how much information that you can get and how much just knowledge about all things, you know, different stories about different things. Oh yeah, so-and-so is coming up on his 50th goal, you know, and you wouldn't have necessarily known that. So I think photographers need to be to do a better job in general, being good communicators and not just doing your photo thing and just talking to your photo folks. Like there are other people when you go to a game that you can talk to the high school AD, talk to the equipment manager, just talk to people, because then you'll get information. You'll find different things that are going on that you might not know that can all help you. Especially if you're the only person, you know, on your staff, you know, you could find out a whole bunch of things just by talking to folks before the game. My wife always gets mad at me. Why are you showing up 3 hours before the game? Well, you know, to get set up, to talk to people, to kind of have conversations and kind of interact with people, because, you know, I think that's probably one of my best skills besides being a shooter, is just the conversations and the communication you have with a variety of people, that if something did come up, they'd let me know, or, hey, we got this, you know, this guy's sister is doing this incredible thing, you know, you need to go do that. Or, hey, you know, it happens all the time. But I think most photographers by nature aren't great talkers. And I think that some of them kind of get kind of scared or whatever, but I always found it to be great, you know,
go, yeah, kind of go hide talk behind your cameras, don't we? Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how you find out information. That's how you figure out other things than just what you're doing. You know, just not the, you know, it's, there's more out there than just the game that you're going to, you know, but.
Well, that's wonderful advice. And on that note, I want to thank you, Kyle Robertson, for taking time out of your busy workday and your dad's schedule to share your success story with our ONPA members. I'm sure they were taking notes to figure out how to steal your crown from you next year. You can view Kyle's award-winning work and his hockey-playing son, Keegan, on Instagram. You can also find his website URL and his Twitter profile, both at KRobPhoto. Well, that wraps up our second episode of the Buckeye Visualist. I am your host, Lori King. Thank you for listening. Keep an F2.8 mind, everybody.
You've been listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast.